It's time for Caffeinated Comics, a lively discussion and debate on comics, film, television, and collectibles, all fueled by the magic of Frappuccinos. Caffeinated Comics is sponsored by Chimeras Comics. Chimeras is your one stop for comic books, graphic novels, hero clicks, Magic the Gathering, and more. Explore the fantastic at Chimeras Comics. And now, here's your hosts, John and Steven.
Thank you. This is Caffeinated Comics, and I am your host, John Clark. We got another Skype call on today. Interesting story with this one. I bought this new microphone that I'm using now to record Jim DeMatteis last week. And if you haven't listened to that show, just stop this right now and go listen to that show. That's a good show. I don't know if I got another show that good in me for a while. So you need to listen to that. It's a fascinating conversation. But now that you've listened to it and you've come back, and it's an hour later, and I called Bill mostly just to say hi and then to test this new mic, and it worked great. As you know from last week's show, didn't work so great the next time. But we were just talking and testing this out, and then in the middle of it he said, you know, I really need to talk about the Doctor Who 50th anniversary. So I said, let me press record. So what we have is an hour of Bill talking about the 50th anniversary, which is interesting for a couple of reasons. First of all, he's had about a week or two to sit and think about it, whereas we recorded ours immediately after. And the other interesting thing I find is that Bill's pretty new to Who, and I find it fascinating to listen to a new fan's perspective because there's an instant passion with Doctor Who. I only discovered it in 2011 during Matt Smith's run, and within 3 weeks, I was hooked. I was deeply into it, and I cared about every character and cared about every plot twist. And since then, I have seen it happen a few times. So Bill started watching it on Netflix not long after me and had the same exact experience. So he's going to go into that experience. And a lot of things he thinks are different than me, and a lot of things were different than a lot of other fans that I talked to. But it's just as passionate. And I always attribute Doctor Who to like Star Trek in the 90s when the original cast was making movies and the Next Generation was making episodes and Deep Space Nine was around the way. And even if you weren't a fan, you were aware of it and you knew it was this big thing going on in sci-fi. And Doctor Who's that now, but it's even more intense. So let's listen to another fan's intense reaction to the 50th anniversary.
Well, I managed to catch the premiere like a day and a half later, thanks to you know, Chromecast and Google Play Video.
Okay, yeah. So you did go online. I was going to ask. So did you buy that, or did they have it streaming?
I bought it. I bought it from Google. It was, you know, it was like $6. You know, the reason I had to do that was that, you know, Comcast decided to screw up the setup on my cable card, so I lost BBC America, and it was sort of a typical cable company experience, but the important thing is I did see it about 30 hours after it originally aired.
So you just had to stay off social networking for 30 hours.
Exactly.
So what'd you think?
Okay, first of all, it was awesome. I'm amazed at how well everything tied together with a story that complex, with that many loops, and with that many, you know, sort of fan favorites to throw in there. That was just fantastic. Great storytelling, great characterizations, and just really extremely well done. I did have one major problem with it, though, and I can't really fault Stephen Moffat for it.
Okay. Dave would fault Stephen Moffat for it.
Well. Here's the thing. The problem with it is not something that has me upset with the show or upset with the staff. It's, damn it, what the hell is wrong with you, Christopher Eccleston? He is my favorite Doctor. He is the Doctor who really brought me into the show. He had that great alien quality to him, that quirkiness, that seriousness. And his role in that show, the Ninth Doctor, would have fit so perfectly into the storytelling of that story, of being able to file that in, of right after the First Doctor after, who thinks he blew up Gallifrey and ended all of his people, and he was so tortured in that. We see that carry through in Tennant and Smith, but to see Eccleston play on that again would have been so fantastic. I mean, his character had that kind of depth. And damn it, Eccleston, I know you've got personal problems with the way the staff was run, or maybe how you thought, Doctor Who would impact your career and not wanting to be pigeonholed. But, this is the kind of thing where this is an obligation to the fans of the show and to your fans. And I gotta say, I don't think I don't think nearly as many people would have any idea who he is if it wasn't for his role in Doctor Who and what Doctor Who has managed to do for him. And he had such a role in bringing that show back and bringing it forward and making it possible for Tennant and Smith to build on that and giving us a different view of the Doctor. And, it is really almost disgusting that he would not come back for this show, for this special, for this 50th anniversary of this cultural touchstone. It's not like a 3-year show that ran in the 80s and he doesn't want to relive, and you don't want to relive, old dying dreams of a sitcom that faded years ago. This is an institution. And I'm sure, and I know, we've talked about this before, that, as an American, it annoys me, but I can't even imagine how, the Brits must feel for, it just seems like it's such a slap in the face to such a large segment of the fan community, the science fiction community, the geek community, and just, fans of really quality television.
Feel better?
A little bit.
Yeah, I agree.
And 5 years from now, 10 years from now, he's going to be interviewed in a magazine, and he is going to say that not participating was something that he regrets. And he just, they just couldn't get through their personal problems between him and the staff and the showrunners and whomever it was to actually just sort of. You do what you need to do. Do the job. Give the fans, give the people something that what they want, and what is a really great story. And with especially with this story, with especially the character arc in this story, his role of the Ninth Doctor would have been able to have such a powerful impact. He's going to regret this, and it's really a terrible shame that he couldn't participate when he did.
Yeah, that's interesting how you talk about regret, because that's exactly what Tom Baker did. Because Tom Baker refused to be a part of the Five Doctors in the 80s, and he had said on many occasions he regretted not doing it. And it was nice to see them give him that really special spotlight in this.
It really was. And I've never been a big fan of Tom Baker's Doctor. I think we've probably talked about that before, but mm-hmm. That role, that was just a really nice touchstone. And even in that scene, it really does a nice job of contrasting of, is Tom Baker in that scene, the Doctor, 5 years older than Matt Smith's current Doctor, 1,000 years older. You don't know. But, the other thing that was really cool about that scene is not only do you see that Tom Baker is old, you really get the sense of Smith's Doctor as being an old man. And that was really a nice touch, a really nice touch.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. And I agree with Eccleston. It stuck out to me the whole time. I thought it was clever using the old footage of him and cutting it in.
Sure.
That at least the Ninth Doctor was there, even though Eccleston wasn't there. But I said this on our podcast after seeing it.
But, I mean, so were the dead Doctors.
Yeah, exactly. So they all matched. Because Christopher Eccleston is dead to Doctor Who, apparently. But, I did watch – the first thing I noticed watching it was, as good as John Hurt was, and John Hurt made me believe that he was really a doctor we had never seen before.
Uh-huh.
Structurally, you could tell he was a patch, and you wouldn't have even had to find a new place for the Ninth Doctor to sit. The War Doctor replaced the Ninth Doctor. Almost every line that John Hurt said should have been said by Christopher Eccleston.
Yeah. Yeah, that I would agree with that. That certainly makes sense. And I think Eccleston could have certainly brought just that extra element of of having that more sense of regret, of having that closer sense of it. You know, Tennant, I don't think, I mean, enough time had passed with Eccleston's, with Nine's life that we have that extra time between between Tennant and Hurt, that we don't get that rawness. We don't get the same rawness and pain that we were able to see Eccleston portray in, you know, in, you know, even in that episode of, you know, with the last Dalek, and you really get a sense of that there. And it was such a lost opportunity.
Yeah, it really was. I totally agree that he'll look back on it. But did you catch the other stuff? Did you catch the Five-ish Doctors reboot and the Paul McGann Night of the Doctor webisodes?
No, I still have to watch those.
Those can really complete the experience, because if you put all those together, every living Doctor is involved in the 50th anniversary in one way or another, as well as most of the companions and Jarn Barrowman, especially in the Five-ish Doctors reboot. Joe was just telling us a story that he heard from TARDIS, was that Peter Davison wrote and directed this, and he was just going to do it on its own. And then as word got around, more and more people got involved. So it may be a spoiler for you, but Peter Jackson and Ian McKellen are in the Five-ish Doctors reboot.
Oh, that is awesome.
Because they have to explain why Sylvester McCoy is not in New Zealand making The Hobbit.
Nice.
So, and if that
something else that I would have liked to have seen, but granted, I haven't done my web research to find out if they're dead or not. But I think there was some reference. I mean, the school where Clara is teaching, that's the same school where Ian was teaching.
Yes, because you could see their names on the plaques, and they are Ian's still alive.
Is he? It would be nice to see Smith, or I guess now Caldini, go ahead and meet Ian. I think that would be a nice touch.
Yeah, he's been a part of the Doctor's Revisited special, so he's definitely been in interviews. He's still around. I don't know if he's still acting, but he looked great. You know,
good.
No, Englishmen age well. You know, you look at, like, even the people that did horrible things to themselves, like. Like, all the 60s rock stars look good. Keith Richards looks better now than when he was 45.
That's because there's no sun in England. They never go outside.
Yeah, there's not a lot of carbs and dairy either.
There's no Marlboro Man in London.
But you see, Monty Python got together again, and they all look like British lords now. You know, they are the establishment. But they're almost to 70, and they look fine.
Stewart.
Yeah, well, Patrick Stewart's the king of Park Slope. That's crazy. He's just he is running around Park Slope with a new wife younger than either one of us. And who is to say he doesn't deserve it?
Exactly. That would have blown my mind, probably growing up in Queens, knowing that, you know, just, yeah, the captain's just, what, 8 miles away?
Yeah. Yeah, well, when we were in...
You know, back in high school, we would have driven around Park Slope hoping to drive by his house.
Oh, yeah. But when we were in high school, Next Generation was on. There was no reason for him to be in Brooklyn.
It was the late 80s. There was no reason for anyone to be in Brooklyn.
Yeah, unless they shot it at Silver Cup. The other thing you really need to watch, I'm assuming that you've only seen the 50th anniversary, but... have you heard of An Adventure in Space and Time?
Oh, is that the little 3-minute prequel?
No. This was a feature TV movie biopic about Verity Lambert creating Doctor Who.
Oh, okay. No, I haven't seen that yet.
It's very, very good. Brian Cox plays like the head of the BBC in it, and the actor who I can never remember, but he's in Harry Potter. He's just in World's End. A craggy old man. I always want to say David Bradley, I think it is, plays William Hartnell. And he's dead on. In fact, David was like, you know, you could have used him as the first Doctor in the 50th anniversary. He was so dead on to Hartnell. But it's a really nice movie. I was kind of hoping that it would appear on the 50th anniversary Blu-ray, but I think it's just going to come out by itself.
Okay.
But yeah, that's one of the things I thought was so nice about this was that – it was almost Moffat planned that the special itself didn't have to do that much heavy lifting. It was obviously designed to feature the modern doctors.
Right.
You know, with Eccleston, with the just even the way the shots were framed of the three of them standing together and the three TARDISes together.
And and I love the Fez bouncing through time and space. I mean, it was a throwaway in that original episode where he puts on the Fez and declares Fez is cool, and then it just keeps popping up. It was just really nice to see.
Yeah,
that.
Well, the fandom have really embraced it. We were saying last week how anytime you see a girl dressed as the 11th Doctor, she is always wearing a Fez.
Oh well, on the Joko cruise in February. And I'm going again this year, and we have and each year there is a Paul F. Tompkins Memorial Mustache Festravaganza.
Ooh.
Where everybody gets dressed up in fake mustaches and everybody wears a fez.
That sounds pretty awesome.
Which is how I've come to own a fez.
Oh, you own one now.
And a series of fake mustaches.
That's really awesome. I met Paul F. Tompkins twice, and both times he was very, very awesome. The second time I actually saw him perform, and that was after we moved to Chicago. We saw him at the Beat Kitchen, which was like a little rock club. And he was amazing. He did 2 hours. But the first time was when I was handing out flyers for the improv. And he walked by, and I saw a few celebrities in Times Square when I was handing out flyers. But
sure.
He was the one guy who he's walking by, and he makes – we don't speak at all, but he makes eye contact with me. And he just kind of nods, and he's like – yeah, they make you do this in stand-up. Like, he had been through this hell.
He'd been there. Yep.
Yeah, and handing out flyers eventually broke me. So it was good to see that everybody knew how horrible it was.
Right.
Oh. Yeah, but overall, I was very satisfied with the whole anniversary itself. And now we have the Christmas special, which we've seen nothing.
Right.
I was very surprised that it didn't end with the big next time Christmas special trailer.
Right. Well, you know, I guess they don't really need to promote it. I mean, I am really interested in seeing what they're going to do with Clara, because Clara was really – I really don't like the way they handled her character in this last season.
No, I agree. She was a MacGuffin. She was never really became a character.
Exactly. And she had so much potential. Every now and then it pops up. It even popped up in this special where it's like, oh, yeah, she's a computer expert, isn't she?
Yeah, she's a lot of things.
That's why she's able to erase the Doctor from existence in the future.
Right. But the thing about Clara, too, that we noticed was that I really believe now that they knew Capaldi was coming. And they cast her to contrast with Capaldi, because if you picture the two of them, and on the Caffeinated Comics Facebook page, there's the poster, which I believe is fan-made, but has the two of them together, and their dynamic pops much better than she did with Matt Smith, because I never felt like she lived up to Karen Gillan's chemistry with Matt Smith.
Right. Well, Matt Smith was never – I mean, after After losing her and Rory, I mean, his doctor never really wanted another companion, and he never really related to Clara. Clara was never a companion for Matt Smith's doctor. She was a project for him, an experiment for him.
Exactly.
She was a puzzle for him, not a person for him.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. And that was the problem. She was also just a puzzle for us. So I'm thinking with that resolved and now Matt Smith exiting, and she's going to be our touchstone when Capaldi comes in. Because when you go back to the classic Doctors, they always try to keep the companion through the regeneration.
Right.
Matt Smith is one of the only exceptions.
But, yeah, exactly. I mean, even, Rose bridged seasons.
Yeah, yeah. And even in the
apparently you can't get rid of Rose.
No, and in the classic Doctors, I mean, they brought in Nyssa and Tegan and Aldrich right before Tom Baker was going to leave, because they would all be companions to Peter Davison. And the same thing with Perry. They brought in Perry very late.
Right.
To switch out for Colin Baker. So I think they really brought her in for this. Because that also, there was a story, I love this story, and it makes me mad it didn't happen, was that during the 50th anniversary special, David Tennant and Matt Smith were enjoying it so much that they pitched another season of Doctor Who to Stephen Moffat, where They would jump through the timeline. David Tennant would make four episodes. Matt Smith would make four episodes. And then they would have four more team-ups in 2014. And Stephen Moffat turned it down, and I was like, that's insane. Why would you turn – they're the two most popular doctors, and they've offered you this huge gift. But I think they had – I think they had Capaldi from the beginning.
Okay. Well, yeah. You know, I also think too much of that would just really shatter the timelines.
Yeah, maybe. I kind of like the idea of trading off Tennant and Matt Smith episodes.
Yeah, trading on letting them do single spots, I think that could make a lot of sense.
Yeah, and
but
when you see
too many team ups,
and when you see the Night of the Doctor, which you know is a 5-minute Paul McGann episode,
right.
Which is only the second episode he ever got to make.
Right.
It really made you feel, well, you can move around in this, and they and in that, you'll see a brief glimpse of John Hurt, but it's a young John Hurt, which means he's established that the doctors can age. So you could get Sylvester McCoy to come back and do another episode. And even though he would look older, you could squeeze that in.
So, okay.
So with these webisodes, with Paul McGann being in a webisode, you've almost opened the doors to having classic doctors make new episodes again.
Interesting.
So if Matt Smith ever wants to come back, that's a way to do it.
Right, right. Huh, that's an interesting approach to it.
Yeah.
You know, I'm a little surprised we didn't see anything from River in this episode.
Yeah, me too. She doesn't really pop up in any of the supporting pieces. We get the mention of Captain Jack.
Yeah.
But we don't, you know, we don't see any of the other companions in the special itself.
Right.
So I guess River falls into that category because we're not going to go back to Amy and Rory, and Rose is not playing Rose.
No, she's not. And I thought that was a really fantastic use of that actress, of having her play, you know, just one of the most significant, you know, companions for the Doctor before the Doctor has even met her.
Mm-hmm.
It actually, in that respect, she mirrors the relationship that River has with Tennant, where he only gets to see her, where the first time he meets her is the episode where she dies.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's interesting. There's, you know, you could play fan fiction all day. I would like to see Idris come back as the TARDIS and see the TARDIS as a person again. But I think... I think it was very well focused of this is a story about the modern doctors. And
right. And
because we don't have Eccleston, it's really about getting the two most popular modern doctors in the same room at the same time. And I love seeing how different they were because when you look at the 11 doctors, they kind of seem the same. They're both young. They're very energetic. They're very thin. They run around. They're very funny. You know, they're very quick. But they have two – when you see them together, they have two very different styles.
Very much so. Very much so. And that's reflected in the evolution over the years. I mean, Smith, you know, 11 has been doctor for 300 years?
Four. I think he's up to about 1,200 years old now.
About 1,200 years old, yeah. And I think that gets contrasted. I think, you know, 400 years, that's a long time.
Yeah, I'd say so.
That's a long time. I mean...
The United States isn't 400 years old.
Exactly.
And that's the thing in playing up that darkness of like not only did he take Amy and Rory hard, but he lived in a cloud for hundreds of years.
Exactly. Well, yeah, and you know, and not just he didn't just live in the cloud for hundreds of years. He also spent all of that time. You know, there's that with the episode where he comes back where the astronaut kills his robot.
Yep.
There's
a 200-year gap in there when he meets himself.
Yeah. So I think that's really interesting. And, you know, he definitely comes across as significantly older than 10 and even 8.5.
Yeah. Yeah, well, 10's trying to come out of the darkness. I mean, you really put that together. And I think it was important to show us part of the Time War, show us what the Doctor did that he regretted,
yeah.
And show us how he went from, you know, Sylvester McCoy and Paul McGann to Eccleston and then Tennant.
Right.
You know, so what are you hoping to see next month for the Christmas special?
I am hoping to see, I really hope Matt Smith gets a good departure, and I'm pretty sure he will. I want to see them do something with Clara. You know, either let's make her a legitimate companion, or let's make her something else. You know, maybe Clara is the TARDIS. You know, it's certainly possible the way she's fused with the Doctor's timeline. I want to see something more about that. There's some rich storytelling elements in there. I really want to see Matt Smith. I want to see him going out, you know, really going out in an angry Matt Smith blaze of glory. I want to see Matt Smith taking the heads off of things. getting shot down or taking his fatal injury while he's clutching the dead bodies of his opponents.
Oh, so you really want a big bloody blowout. You don't want like a self-sacrifice and a wink.
No. It can be a very self-sacrificing thing. It can be the kind of thing where, you know, one guy's got to go out, and he goes out, and he takes, and I don't know, he takes out, you know, 500 Cybermen before they finally are able to bring him down, or whatever it is. I really liked Tennant's departure. I really liked his final goodbye scenes and that path. And that was, you know, I know a lot of people are bitter about what that did to Matt Smith. I don't think it took away anything from Matt Smith. I think it was really great for Tennant. But I think for Matt Smith's departure, it's got to have anger. It's got to have that violence that he's pushed towards. Because in the episode where, where the Doctor goes to war
Good Man Goes to War.
That was really a Good Man Goes to War. That was really built up that we were going to see a good man push too far and really going to war. And it was really just incredibly silly and anticlimactic.
I did like Captain Runaway.
it could have been so much bigger than it was.
Yeah, I got the feeling in that it was like it kept pushing to be big, and then I'm like, yeah, but it's a TV show budget, so pull it back.
You don't even have to do it in a big budget way. You can tell that story. You can tell that story with, you know, how many ships are getting destroyed, all of this impact. You can tell that through garbled radio transmissions. You don't need the big special effects. I don't need the big special effects. But in terms of what really just turned off into, you know, basically just sort of a little standoff. I mean, really?
Yeah. I tell you what I really want to see. I don't know that we're going to get it. It seems almost too obvious to get it. But we have never seen the 11th Doctor go up against the Master. That's the one major villain that Matt Smith has not faced. There's no Master episode since the end of time. And it doesn't have to be John Sim. It could be another actor. But if this is the last, if this is the last chance we're going to have with Matt Smith, there were a lot of rumors that Benedict Cumberbatch was going to be the Master, but I think it was all fan fiction.
Well, you know, actually, that could make some sense. Since the last time we saw the Master, he was pulling the Time Lord Executive Council or whatever out of a time bubble resulting from the war.
Exactly, yeah. The time bubble was created by this 50th anniversary special.
Yeah, exactly. So there's certainly some room for a tie-in in that, especially if Caldini's, now that Matt Smith has a mission, which will become Caldini's mission, of actually going out and finding Gallifrey. I mean, I think that really does open up a legitimate place for a Master storyline.
Yeah, you know what? We might see a lot of Capaldi in the Master. I could see that, because if he's even if you don't pick up the end of time plot line, if you're bringing back all the Time Lords and you have one out there who's basically the Joker of Time Lords, you know, he's going to get involved.
Yeah, exactly. And this is one of those times where, you know, the last appearance of the Weeping Angels, or the one where Amy gets the angel in her eye. That was stupid.
I like that. There's some good moments in there.
There's some good moments in the episode.
I like the weird counting down.
Yeah, that was fine. But you know, I had trouble with the whole angel in the eye. But you know, and the Statue of Liberty angel.
I thought was kind of crazy.
That was a little okay. I'll give it to you. But here's
my problem with the Statue of Liberty angel. Before we get past that,
besides the fact that it was Ghostbusters ripoff.
Well, there's that, but that's not even my big problem with it, is that if you are looking at an angel, it cannot move.
Right.
You and I are from New York. In Lower Manhattan, if the Statue of Liberty got off Liberty Island and walked to the village, you'd look at it. You don't have to be Amy or Rory. You or I would be looking at it.
Somebody would be looking at it.
Somebody would just go, say, what's that statue doing on Bleecker?
Exactly. Especially in a post 9/11 world.
Well, to be fair, this was 1938. Still, but the Nazis were coming.
They were doing air raid blackouts. the civil defense would have had their eye on that. Here's where I think they can bring the angels in, because I have this. My theory is that the angels are just former Time Lords, or Time Lords become angels, because we see in that episode when the Master is bringing back the Time Lords, and was it? We see the Doctor's mother in there, but like two of the three people in there are busy covering their eyes, like weeping angels would.
Hmm.
That pose mirrors what we see in the angels, and I think that is going to tie the Time Lords are much more closely related to the angels than we've seen so far.
Maybe the weeping angels are the only ways the Time Lords can escape the time bubble.
That would make sense if the weeping angels can actually send them back to a different time. Maybe the weeping angels are how you get out of the time bubble.
Yeah, I'm worried about using the Weeping Angels too much. I feel like you and I always go back to comparing it to Star Trek. The Weeping Angels are very close to being danger of becoming the Borg, where that first story was so perfectly brilliant and pure, but to find every time they come back to them to find new things for them to do, they start to change the character a little bit.
Where
with the Borg, it was like, we have no identities, except for this guy that we found. We have no leader, except for this lady that's taking over the Enterprise.
Yeah.
You know, it becomes so overly complicated to find new angles in that it starts to weaken the core concept. And I think the Weeping Angels are here to stay. I'm fine if we don't see them again till Capaldi. I think they've taken their place amongst the Daleks and the Cybermen. As classic villains, they're like the Venom in Spider-Man. It's like you have all the classic villains right away, then you get nobody, you get a bunch of jerks that you never see again, and then you get like the one breakout one.
And you see, that exactly ties right back in there, because really Venom is an outgrowth of Spider-Man himself.
Mm-hmm.
Like angels are outgrowths of Time Lords.
Oh. I'm not saying it's true, but I'm saying I can follow it. Have you seen the picture? This is my favorite picture on the internet right now, and I posted it on Caffeinated Comics Facebook page today. There's a picture of the Beatles playing, and there's a guy in the picture who looks exactly like Matt Smith.
Nice.
And it does not look Photoshopped. It looks like just a guy in the 60s who looks like Matt Smith. And people are saying this proves that the Doctor exists.
You know, it would have been really so awesome if they'd given David Tennant a leg to run with the Olympic torch for the London Games.
Yeah, well, the London Games, they were supposed to have a whole Doctor Who section, and it ended up being a TARDIS sound in the music. And I was like, they were celebrating all things British, and the whole time I'm like, well, where's Doctor Who? It's a worldwide phenomenon. And then you heard a TARDIS. But apparently, like, all the doctors were going to come out on the field. It was going to be a big deal, and it got cut.
Ah.
Yeah. Now, that's a regret that they'll have. Christopher Eccleston would be like, oh, could have been in the Olympics. And have you seen Thor Dark
World? Oh, crap, that ended it all for him.
Yeah. Have you seen Thor Dark World yet?
No, I haven't.
Well, spoiler free, and we covered this when we talked about Thor Dark World. Christopher Eccleston in Thor Dark World wears a ton of makeup and speaks in an alien language. So he would rather have done that than this script for the 50th anniversary that John Hurt was happy to take.
He would rather have been a Suntaran.
Yeah. Yeah. That's pretty much what he does. He has very few lines in English. He's under so much makeup he can't do very much. And it's like, between the two, he chose that.
Good choice, dude.
Yeah, you can't control someone else's career.
No. No.
That
puts things on. It was a great show, despite that one glaring thing.
Yeah, it sticks out. I felt they did as much with it as possible. And as I said, I didn't think I was going to buy the War Doctor because I'm like, all right, well, now you've used up all your doctors. So this one better be good. Mm-hmm. And you never talked about him before. And but his performance of it, like, he was a fully realized doctor. He had his own little quirks that no one else had that totally fit the personality.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he was not doing Christopher Eccleston. He was his own character.
He was. Very much his own.
Yeah, and it's going to be interesting to see as it moves forward when they talk about all the doctors, when you see, like, the line of 11. When Capaldi comes in, will John Hurt always be included? Like, will we get War Doctor action figures?
Right.
Because he's a doctor. He's a doctor. Yeah. There's no two ways around it.
And so now we have actually seen every regeneration directly into the next Doctor.
I love that. And again, spoiler, I'll just say that. Go watch Night of the Doctor online. In fact, when we hang up, you're on your iPad. Just put, it's 6 minutes. It's like a long Beatles song.
Okay, I'll definitely check that out.
Yeah, but it fills in.
So any other new doctors we get either have to be after Caldini or they have to be a regeneration prior to Hartnell.
Part of me wants you to just keep calling him Caldini, but it's Peter Capaldi. For some reason, I really had a hard time with that. But Caldini sounds kind of like the Steve Martin bit where he would pull things out of his zipper.
Caldini, where do I know that name from?
I don't think it is a name. I think you want it to be a name. You just want to say the great Caldini, Dr. Caldini. How good was his cameo?
Oh, no, I know. Caldini is the author of a book called Influence, which is a great book about persuasion.
And he influenced you to use his name in this conversation.
Apparently.
That book has value.
It does. It does. That's one I recommend often. But Capaldi. I'll try and keep that in mind.
Okay. Yeah, it'll get easier as he starts making episodes. But how much did you like his cameo in the 50th?
That was just a real nice clip. That was perfect.
Yep. It was just his eyes. We know what he looks like.
We're calling in 13 and yeah.
Yeah, I honestly thought that the especially they make so much a point that the past and future don't matter. It's all, you know, timey-wimey.
Right.
But the fact that said to me, he should be in this. And actually, I honestly thought when they said, there's an old man looking for you, before Tom Baker came out, I thought it was going to be Capaldi, and that would have just been the end of it.
I thought it would have revealed
him in his outfit. And, mm-hmm. like, just had one line, like, do you mind if I have a go at this? And then you just go, oh, my God, he was in it. And then, but Tom Baker was even better because he just got old Tom Baker on you.
Well, here's the other thing that's real interesting about that episode. The girl with the asthma.
Yeah.
And and she's wearing the actual scarf.
Yeah, she's wearing the scarf.
She's wearing the scarf. So, obviously, she has a relationship with the curator.
I think so. Or because
she's part of... Could she be yet one more doctor's daughter?
I don't know about that. I thought the scarf was, first of all, it was a very obvious wink, but also since she's a part of UNIT, and Tom Baker was a part of UNIT, he probably left scarves all over the place.
Yeah, and she worked at that museum.
Yeah.
So she would have been, so she would have a personal relationship with Tom Baker.
Yeah, maybe he bequeathed it to her.
Could be. It could be. And I thought it was just going to be a quick when, you know, when Smith goes, oh, nice scarf.
That's
going to be it.
But she uses it. And I like that. I do like the things that, like anyone, there's little objects you're still attached to from your childhood. And then there's other things where you're just like, oh, that's so stupid. You know, I'm not growing my mullet back anytime soon. The same way I love the way that Matt Smith looked down on David Tennant as you know, pretentious college student.
Yes, you look back at yourself in your younger years.
Yeah, exactly. He's like, why are you wearing sneakers? You know, and when they go onto his TARDIS, it's like that, you know, the crumbly organic TARDIS.
Right.
What is this? And Matt Smith goes, it's his grunge phase. He'll grow out of it.
Ooh, you brought back the round things. What do they do?
No idea. Yeah, and I thought that TARDIS was a merge of all the TARDISes together as it was shifting. But it turned out later when I watched it again, that's the War Doctor's TARDIS.
Mm-hmm.
So it has like the David Tennant organic center console with the big white round things.
Right.
Which was a nice, easy way to do it instead of designing a whole new TARDIS.
Mm-hmm.
And that's another thing. I think this whole half of the season introducing Clara is building to Capaldi. And I think that new TARDIS is Capaldi's TARDIS.
Yeah, I think so. I think that since they've done such – they've focused so much on, you know, building the TARDIS as its own character. I mean, you know, Journey to the Center of the TARDIS this season?
Yeah, that was a good one.
That was really interesting, and that was actually one of my favorite moments, by the way, from this show was you know, when our war doctor looks at the thing and goes, why is there never a big red button?
Yeah, and then there was.
You know, a nice callback to, you know, Smith always looking for the big red button.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. I did enjoy it, and I thought this last season had been pretty weak, but the more I think about Capaldi, the more I think it's all a build-up. It's like it's giving Matt Smith that last lap the same way David Tennant had those specials,
right?
You know, and some of them added up, some of them didn't. Planet of the Dead, Waters of Mars. I think these last few episodes where they did like ghost stories and submarine stories, I think it was just this last lap for Matt Smith to kind of touch on the different eras of Doctor Who, also for the 50th anniversary. But because I was always wondering why they changed the console of the TARDIS. I was like, Matt Smith's TARDIS looked gorgeous, and it was expensive as all hell looking, you know, with all the platforms. And I'm like, why would you get rid of that? And it's like, yeah, because you don't want to introduce too many new elements with Capaldi's new episode. So let's bring in his TARDIS. Let's bring in his companion.
Right.
So I'm more excited to seeing what Capaldi's going to do. I think the show is going to have a very different tone. And I'm very curious to see what that tone's going to be.
I'm pretty optimistic.
Me too. And I'm never optimistic.
We are really setting ourselves up for disappointment.
Oh, my God. We're going to have another Skype call. Because they're like, what's going on? But I've also learned about myself that I'm usually easy to please right after I've seen something.
Uh-huh.
I've noticed that on listening to some of our reviews. I'm like, no, that was really good. And then I go back a month later. I'm like, this is garbage. This is garbage, and I was pleased that I went and did something tonight. You know, it's like Anchorman 2. It's probably not going to be good.
Star Trek Into Darkness?
Yeah, I thought that was great when I saw it. And now I'm like, now I don't like it so much that I saw a clip of it today, and I'm like, eh, maybe it's not that bad. Some movies you don't have a real opinion of for a year.
They got to bake a little bit.
Yeah, some movies you do. That third act just goes very fuzzy.
Yeah, it does.
Greatest thing in the world.
this week?
My greatest thing in the world this week is going to be TSA PreCheck.
What's that?
TSA PreCheck allows you to be pre-screened by the Department of Homeland Security. Basically, your airline transmits your flight information to them in advance, and they give you a go or no go. It started a couple years ago where airlines awarded this to their top frequent flyers. And now, if you're a member of Global Entry, which is a U.S. customs program that lets you bypass most of the customs line and just check in when you come back in the country at a kiosk, costs $100 for 5 years. If you're a member of Global Entry, now you get a trusted traveler number, which gives you TSA PreCheck. What that means is that when I go through security at many airports now, I just have to walk through the magnetometer. I don't have to go through the nudoscope.
Okay.
I can wear my shoes.
You can wear your shoes?
I can keep my belt on. I can keep my Freedom baggie with my 3 ounce liquids in my suitcase. I can keep multiple laptops in my bag and just send them right through. It's like going through airport security in 1998. If you're flying more than 4, 5, 6 times a year, $100 for 5 years for Global Entry is money well spent to get TSA PreCheck, which is just awesome.
That does sound amazing. Do you remember back in the 90s we were picking somebody up from the airport at JFK?
Oh, yeah, we just walked past right past a closed security gate. Didn't even realize we'd done it until we were at the gate. We're like, wait, weren't we supposed to go through something?
Yeah, the airport was empty. We walked through the entire thing at 3 in the morning and just waited for the plane to get there.
Yeah, exactly.
I remember one time picking up somebody.
If we did that today, not only would we go to jail, but they would evacuate the entire terminal and rescreen everyone.
Oh yeah, it'd be like 28 weeks later. They just start gunning people down that were near us. I remember picking up somebody at the gate in the airport while I was drunk. I remember like getting there too early, and the bar was open, and then I'm just flopped all over the gate, no ticket. I don't even think I showed ID to get beer. It's not often I bemoan things in a nostalgic way, but damn it, airports used to be fun.
You could just go there to just watch planes.
Yeah.
Now if you're going there to just watch planes, you get on a list.
Yeah. Not a good list. Not a plane lover list. This guy likes planes. Let's send him some more info on planes.
Yeah, exactly.
Let's put him on the plane mailing list.
Yeah, they'll put you on a plane.
They'll put you on a plane that doesn't come back.
Right.
But that is pretty awesome. I guess I have to do one. My favorite thing of the week is Wingstop. Have you been to a Wingstop?
I have not been to a Wingstop.
Have you seen any?
I don't know. I've seen Buffalo Wild Wings. I've seen Wingdom.
I've never seen Wingdom.
Wingstop.
Yeah, Wingstop is kind of like Buffalo Wild Wings without the embarrassing Hooters girls and loud football shows. It's like they're only about the size of a Subway.
Loud football shows.
That's as much of a nerd as I am. I didn't even realize I called it that until you called me out on it. I was like, what are those football shows? That's hockey. I don't like sports. I was born weak and pale and small. There's nothing for sports for me.
But damn it, you will follow the Quidditch World Cup.
No, I get bored at the Quidditch scenes. I can't follow Quidditch. I'm like, why? Wait a minute. Why do the goals matter if you just grab a snitch? Why shouldn't the game be, let's grab that snitch? I'm so confused.
If the game is let's grab that snitch, then you're just in the mob.
No, but you know, it'd be like a remake of Stop That Pigeon. Stop that pigeon, grab that snitch now. But you know, every time in Harry Potter they would show the Quidditch field, I felt like I was taking a pop quiz. I was like, oh no. Okay, what do those rings mean? And what are the... Okay, are those just people in the stands or are those judges? I don't... What's going on? And then...
So then you probably didn't follow too much pyramid all that well either.
$10,000 pyramid?
No, pyramid.
Oh, no.
From Battlestar.
No. Was it not at all?
Anders was the pyramid star.
Yeah, no. All I know is that they took some Quidditch stuff and threw it on the ground at 90 degrees and threw a football through them. And I was just like, and the whole time they did that, I'm like, what's this scene really about? Is it about Anders and Starbuck? Because let's get to that. And in Harry Potter, when they did Quidditch, it was always like 20 pages, and she would re-explain the rules every year, and I still wouldn't get it. Like, it wasn't until I saw the first Harry Potter movie and I saw the field, I went, oh, that's why people in the stands are so high. I know nothing about sports, but we were talking about wings. And I like those wings. I like them, the wings. Now, Wingstop is kind of like, it's like the Five Guys of chicken.
Okay.
And it's awesome. They give you way too many fries.
Uh-huh.
And they have like 20 different flavors of wings, which you can get as strips, which is good because I don't like to be reminded that I'm eating animals.
The bones creep you out.
Totally creep me out because then it's like muscle and sinew, and I'm like halfway to a zombie movie when I'm eating wings.
So really, you can't wait to get to Soylent Green.
Oh, I love Soylent Green is people. I don't want to eat people. I want to get into Jetsons where we just take pills. And the Jetsons had like the Futuraca cycle, which was kind of the same thing as the Enterprise. The food replicator.
Mm-hmm.
I'm down with the food replicator. We were talking about this with Elaine on the show. How you could make you could turn a 3D printer into a food replicator if you just filled the tanks with protein instead of plastic.
Right.
I'm down with that. I like science food.
Yep. And Sergey Brin is also working on artificial meat.
I'm fine with that too. I don't know why I'm not as skinny as I was in high school, because I still don't like to eat. But I like Wingstop. Wingstop's good. They got a lemon pepper that I really like. And they have one of those, they have like 15 degrees of hot.
Uh-huh.
And the top one was atomic. And I like spicy food. So I was like, hey, can I get the atomic? And they all went, no. I was like, you don't have it? You don't want it. I said, why? Because we don't want it. And I said, and I was like, you know, they said, we'll give you a little cup. And you can taste a sample. I said, okay. And that cup was full of needles that shot through my tongue into my mouth and made the rest of the chicken not as much fun. But next time you're in the Midwest, it seems like the perfect thing that would just pop up in an airport.
I'm sure it's around. I'm sure it's right outside the airport, next to the Super 8 and the Hampton Inn and the Fairfield Inn. And
they tend to be cluster. Yeah. They tend to be next to Chipotle's, like Chipotle's and Starbucks. They're in like that mini mall. But you know what? Next time you're coming to the Midwest, that's where I'll take you.
Sounds like a plan.
And we'll put the microphone on the table.
Of course. Why would we?
But thanks for letting me test my microphone.
Absolutely.
I appreciate that. And then I'm glad that in the middle of it you said, all right, I have a rant about the 50th anniversary. So I pressed record and now we have an episode. How can we follow you, Bill?
You can follow me on Twitter at Cromley, Cromely. You can also follow my rarely updated blog at Cromley.net.
Yeah, I still have my blog too. I don't think blogs are done. I just think unless you're a journalist, they're just not as necessary in the social world. You can tweet most of the stuff that you used to blog.
Sure, sure.
Yeah, you know what? I might as well do the plugs here. You want to wait while I do the plugs?
Okay.
You can follow my Twitter at Not In My Book. That is the only Twitter feed for Caffeinated Comics, and we post all the news there. Like our Facebook page, we do a lot of new content there now. You'll see a lot of news items and a lot of opinion polls, and every now and then some pictures of things that we describe on the show. And be sure to stop by and visit Steven at Chimera's Comics at 19 South Grange Road. Thanks, Bill.
Oh, thank you very much, John. It's great. It was great getting here to get that off my chest.
Caffeinated Comics is a Not In My Book production.
Take that, meatball!